Okay, so we have a huge agenda today, so we're going to get started right now. A lot of stuff to talk about. Number one, like I said, welcome to the March Maximum Impact Conference call. We are going to spend some time at the end of the call today on question and answer. So if you do have any specific questions about our topic today or any other topics, feel free to stand by. And at the end of our call, we will open up some time for that. Two really exciting topics today. We're talking about how you can work with us at NAPMA and World Vision International, a charity that's working a lot in Haiti and perhaps now in Chile as well, to not only raise funds and raise awareness for Haiti earthquake victim relief, but also to use that as leverage and as an opportunity to drive enrollments into the school as well. So I'm excited about that. And then I'm also excited about our opportunities as school owners. Let me recast exactly why today's topic is so important. The second topic is a direct connection to a discussion that we've been having on the NAPMA discussion board, and which, by the way, has been reinvigorated. So if you haven't, checked the NAPMA discussion forum in a while, you may want to go back there and check it out and post some questions and answers and things like that. The NAPMA discussion forum had some technical problems a few months back, and we've just straightened them out, and it was sort of a big mess. But now we have some new technology involved that when you go to the NAPMA discussion forum, you can go to your profile, and there's a daily digest that you can subscribe to, which means you don't have to go back in and log into the discussion forum. You can just have the update sent to you by email. So I'd recommend that everybody go to the NAPMA member site, go to the forum, the discussion board, and log in, and then go to your profile in the discussion forum and set yourself up to receive the daily updates. There have been some really spirited, really good discussions on there, especially over the last few weeks. Some basic questions, but also some interesting technical questions and some interesting more complex systems questions. So the second part of today, we're going to be talking about the intro process and how we see schools in the industry really do the intro process very well, very smoothly, very tightly, and frankly how we see a lot of them screw it up. And that'll be a very interesting point of conversation for us today, because it frankly is a huge issue with martial arts schools. And I'll tell you the story of how we came to this in just a second. No, you know what? Let's do that now. And Master Oliver will be joining us in just a moment to talk to us a little bit about this Haiti promotion that we're doing with World Vision International. So I'll save that. So let's talk just briefly about our second topic today first. And let me expand on that second topic, too, by saying if you have not yet reserved your seats for the NAPMA Quantum Leap, the 2010 NAPMA Quantum Leap coming up in Orlando, and that's going to be in May 6th, 7th, and 8th, you're going to want to do that right away. So go to NAPMAQuantumLeap.com. The early bird discounts expired 3 days ago, but I have not updated them on the member section of the website yet, on the members on the Quantum Leap website yet. So go to NAPMAQuantumLeap.com, and you can still register for early bird discounts. That'll go away Monday. So you're going to want to do that right away. We've got a lot of exciting stuff happening there, including three sort of guest speakers that you've never seen before, and that frankly no one in the industry has ever seen before, who bring tremendous value to us inside the industry. So we'll be talking a lot about that over the next several weeks, of course. But if you haven't registered yet, you're definitely going to want to do that. We have a very intimate setting for this event, and it's going to fill up quickly. I think it's already two-thirds full. So you're going to want to make sure you get that set up right away. So let me quickly tease the second topic for today, which is our intro process. Now, there was a thread on the discussion forum, and I'm not going to please don't take offense to this. If you're on the line and you're one of the folks who participated in the discussion, please don't take offense, because I absolutely mean none. But it is interesting that many questions and answers and systems challenges that we find in martial arts schools come from basic infrastructure systems that are broken, not what the school owner perceives the problem really to be. So let me give you the sort of brief history of how this discussion came about. basically there was a thread on the discussion forum that said pricing in small towns. And as soon as I read the topic heading, I knew that we were in for an argument, right? And I don't mean an argument in a bad way. In fact, I'm very fond of spirited debate. Any of you who have been in any of our Inner Circle or Peak Performer meetings will attest to the fact that I like to have folks who are really sharp, arguing their points. So the topic of the discussion was pricing in small towns, and a school owner said that he was in a relatively small town and felt that his town couldn't support the prices that he thought were appropriate, or that perhaps he heard NAPMA members or us talk about and thought were unrealistic for his area. And what happens in many cases when a school owner believes this is three things. Number one is that they have inside themselves been programmed to believe that what they do isn't particularly valuable, meaning monetarily. They have been, we are all products of our environment. Let's admit that, right? We're all, perhaps we're born with some genetic advantages and disadvantages, and perhaps we're born with some instinctual properties or some instincts. But in reality, the sum total of our lives is the sum total of our experiences. And, I feel so fortunate to have been in my life been exposed by big thinkers. I've been exposed to big thinkers. I've been exposed to people who think outside the box and really choose not to be the standard of the industry, or choose not to be the mediocre majority, but rather rise above that. And I fully recognize and realize that many people haven't had that advantage in life. They haven't had the ability. They haven't had that opportunity to be surrounded by folks who think bigger than perhaps they do, or perhaps the norm. So the discussion then became, I think my reply was, well, let's not talk about your pricing just yet. Let's look at your introductory process. Let's look at how exactly you're enrolling students, and let's see if there's anything we can do there that might really be the problem, and price really isn't the problem. Maybe that's not the challenge yet. Maybe there are some other challenges here. And the only thing I want to say about this before we get into our discussion today in earnest is that virtually every consulting day that I've ever done, and virtually every coaching client who has a growth challenge, right? Virtually all of them have internal systemic challenges that are really causing their problems, and pricing is almost never it, right? So meaning if I think that my market can only support $65 a month for lessons, well, look, I've got to tell you, we have clients all over the world. We have, NAPMA members in every state, and we have NAPMA members in 26 countries. We have franchises now in, 20 states, something like that, different demographic areas. And every one of our franchises is at $197 a month for an enrollment, and, up to $400 a month for their leadership program, for their renewal programs. And in our NAPMA membership, we have schools that are charging $35, $45, $55, $65 a month, literally down the street from member schools who are charging $100, $200, $300, $400 a month for lessons. So it's almost never geographic. It's almost never demographic. It's almost always systemic problems, systemic challenges. So that's all I'm going to say about that until we get into that part of the discussion. So let's go back to the beginning. And Master Oliver, I'm glad to see that you're with us today. Our first topic on the list today, sir, is you've worked very hard over your career to build substantial relationships with charities and community outreach organizations and a bunch of folks like that. And we're now working with World Vision International on this Haiti program, on this Haiti, hurricane relief. It's all in Florida, earthquake relief program. Maybe you can give us a brief outline of that, and then we can tell everybody how they can participate and all that sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, and to make it fairly brief, is the, you know, it's very important for your school to be constantly working on community outreach and charitable activities. And, you know, if for no other reason than occasionally there's something that happens in your school that, they, you know, merits bad press. And if you've been networked into every elementary school, every church, all the community activities in different businesses for many, many years doing positive community service, getting good press, you know, PR coverage, et cetera, then, you know, people tend to discount, you know, the one or two complaints or one or two black eyes that we all end up having regardless of how on top of things we are over the years. I mean, from that perspective, it's very, 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 very important to be constantly out there with charitable activities. On the second note here is one of the ways that you get access to both for-profit and nonprofit businesses, is to be associated with a nonprofit as opposed to being looking like you're self-serving. And, you know, we talk about often, Toby, it's the, you know, what's in it for me syndrome. And if you ever approach any other nonprofit or for-profit business thinking about what's in it for you as opposed to what's in it for them, you're sunk to begin with. And when you layer on a nonprofit angle, it becomes what's in it for them, meaning the organization, the business you're approaching. Plus, it takes out the sting of that there's a profit motive for you and puts into an altruistic motive that's extremely valuable. And, you know, that's not to mean that you're doing this purely out of altruism. You're doing this also to benefit your school. And frankly, I think we should all be, you know, working on benefiting our schools from an altruistic sense of the ripple effect we make to the community. Because if you're not, if your students aren't benefiting more from the program than you're charging them, then you've got a problem right then and there. So that having been said, is what the program that we're doing with Haiti does is it allows you, one, to approach any and everybody in the area of your school. And I know that we have some schools that focus on kids and families the way that, you know, like our schools do, Toby, and we have others that are predominantly more focused in the adult environment. And this is true either way. If you have a school that's more focused on adults, it gives you a better entree to everything from the softball and volleyball leagues around your area to the community centers to the local health clubs to Kiwanis and JCs. If you have a program that's focused on kids, it gives you better entree to elementary schools and to daycares and to churches and to Toys R Us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess that's a little bit of an overview. Did you want to go into more specifics, or is that what you're looking for there, Toby?
Well, it's a good start. I think that's fine. I mean, I guess for everyone who is on our Inner Circle B performer call, they're caught up on exactly what we're doing. But for those who weren't, basically, what we're doing is, you know, we've partnered with Word International, and we've generated a quick little flyer for you guys that's up on the NAPMA member site. So, you know, go ahead and log into your member site, and you can download it there. And basically, the marketing concept here is that you're trying to leverage business-to-business relationships, leverage elementary school relationships, churches, daycares, you name it. And, you know, we're just kind of distributing these flyers, and basically what's happening is, any parent who wants can, for whatever the price is, and I think right now it's on there, $59 or something like that, they can make a $59 tax-deductible donation to World Vision International in their name, and we'll give them, you know, a free program at the school, free uniform, free DVD, free CD, you know, whatever it is that your offer is, right? So basically it's just a win-win opportunity. So go to the website, download that flyer, take a look at it. You can customize it, put in your own logo and all that sort of stuff, and you're able to do that. The you know, this really is sort of one of those pieces of magic that really works well because, again, you're going into all these relationships with what's in it for them. And at the same time, you're also able to knock down the doors of some places in many cases that are closed to you otherwise, because they perceive you as, you know, either the competition or this little business down the road that just doesn't mean anything, you know, whatever. But this is sort of like the ability to tie into something a little bigger than you are. So that's that. I mean that's really the marketing concept that is really been a big winner so far in a bunch of the Mile High Karate schools, and will be as time goes on. And I'm sure we'll try to figure out, you know, some way to tie into this Chile thing as well. But you know, same idea. And again, it goes back to the altruistic nature that we all really, really do have. And my opinion would be, I would rather teach, you know, a small number of students at premium prices so that I have plenty of revenue and plenty of opportunity to go do charitable acts than to teach, you know, 100 people for free and have that take up all my time and not have the opportunity to do more charitable activities. You know what I mean? So it's definitely sort of I think a better use of all of our time. But anyway, that's basically the marketing concept, and it's really working well, and I have every belief that it'll work even better as time goes on and as we get more critical mass. But that's it. Yeah. So I mean that was topic number one on the list is how we're doing this Haiti promotion. So everybody go download the flyer, take a look at it. If you have any questions, post them up on the discussion board, and we'll have a nice little thread on this. But it's pretty self-explanatory and very powerful. So that's that. So the second thing on our list, and actually the most important piece of what we wanted to discuss today, was, again, the story of the thread on the discussion forum. Was the initial auspices of the thread was pricing in a small town. And as you well know, sir, that it's a very common occurrence for us to really dig into a school who thinks that they have price elasticity challenges and find that the real challenge isn't really pricing or demographics or geography or any of that other stuff. It's, you know, severely broken processes or lack thereof. So let me give you the quick rundown of where we were at. And the good news is we have lots and lots of solutions for today's. And in fact, I have emailed everybody a little worksheet. If you've got that with you, you might as well open that up. But so the initial frame, the initial perspective of the school owner was that, you know, people in his area couldn't afford what he thought he was worth. Yet, let me describe to you what his introductory process was. And again, no offense is meant by any of this. Many, many, many people are in exactly the same scenario as this gentleman is, and this is a great learning opportunity for all of us. And again, this is back to basics, right? This is a very basic concept here, but this is one of those little hinges that swings big doors. And if this little hinge is broken, then it doesn't matter how hard you push against that door, it ain't going to budge, right? So here's the deal. His introductory process basically was that they come in for their first lesson, and he puts them in a regular class, and they take class with the beginners, and then after the class, he sits down in the chairs in the lobby with the parent and says, well, here's the price sheet, and here's the class schedule. You know, would you like to enroll today? And they say, this may be an oversimplification of the process, by the way. I may be missing a few steps here, admittedly so, but this is probably the worst-case scenario. Sit down. Here's the price sheet. Here's the class schedule. Would you like to enroll today? No? Okay, great. Well, you know, why don't you just give me a call, and we'll, you know, I'll call you in a couple of days, and we'll see what works for you, right? So, obviously, there's a lot of things broken there. So let's not perhaps spend much time on what's broken. Let's think about what we can do right here, right? Let's think about what works most effectively. First of all, if you look at your little worksheet, you'll see that, you know, the first step in this process is the info call, right? And I've got some little bullet points there that we covered in two calls ago. So first is the info call, then we set the appointment. After the appointment is set, before they show up for their appointment, we do a confirmation call, right? And the confirmation call is designed for a couple of purposes. It's designed to make sure that they actually show up for their introductory appointment, right, which is a big problem. In lots and lots of schools who aren't keeping track of their statistics, one of the things that we find is broken very early on is that they set a lot of appointments from people who call, but, you know, 10, 20, 30% of them show up rather than 80 or 90% of them show up. So without even spending any extra money on marketing or without any, you know, without, you know, any other resources, we tweak their info call script, we tweak their confirmation call or insert a confirmation call, and can immediately double their results or triple their results just by getting the people to show up for their appointments, right? So again, so it's info call, we set the appointment during the info call, we then confirm them, then they show up for their first intro, right? And today, I guess, really all we really wanted to accomplish today was let's look at an outline for maybe what that first intro should look like, what the second intro should look like, and what should happen between. But now we've done, so Master Oliver, I guess the question number one is, we've done our info call, we've handled that appropriately. We talked about that a couple calls ago, so I think that's pretty good. We've set the appointment, and we've done it in a manner in which they actually want to come in, which is also a big gap in many cases. By the way, if you guys did not hear that last call on info call, pivot profile praise prompt, and finding the problem and making it real, if you didn't hear that, go back to your member section and download that question from the teleconference archive, because that's extremely important. So now we've done that. We've done the confirmation call. We actually miraculously got them to show up for their intro. Now, obviously, the worst thing I can do is just throw them into class and hope they have a good time, right? Because what's appropriate for a brand new student to experience in the first lesson of their life is very different than probably what's going on in my beginner's class, right? So maybe, Master Oliver, from a 40,000 foot in the air perspective, if you like, you can walk us through how that should look and what that's all about.
How the introductory process looks?
Yeah, just that we're at the point of the first intro now. We've actually got them to show up.
Yeah. Well, you know, from a broad brush overview, what I see happening constantly, you know, I hate to tell old war stories, but, you know, if I could go back to Junery Institute circa 1979, 1980, and I remember Jeff Smith was training the staff on intros, and we had a new program director. His name was Sashar. And we were role-playing intros, and what he did is he took them into the introductory room and gave them a 15-minute history of the martial arts, and then a 5 or 7 minute overview on what we were teaching, and then a 5 or 7 minute overview on why what we were teaching was the best thing ever, you know, in the history of martial arts. And the, you know, the first thing to know is that that's absolutely completely wrong. Is, you know, I see over and over again, people want to have a discussion about Taekwondo, Shotokan, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Goju, Kempo, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what they don't realize is people are there for an outcome. They're there for a benefit. And it doesn't matter whether it's an adult or a child. Is if it's an adult, I'm there for the outcome of being more confident, being in better shape, being less intimidated. For the outcome of being able to defend myself in any and all situations. But I'm not there to learn jiu-jitsu or to learn judo or to learn karate. That's not what they're there for. If it's a parent of a child, they're there for an outcome, and they're there for, and again, think of the child and the adult, the parents, and sometimes dad and mom as being separate people who have separate desires. But the child, let's say, is there in order to have fun and meet people and feel comfortable and learn something that's exciting. However, the parents are there for the child to become more disciplined and more focused and do better at school and perhaps to not be picked on bullies. Perhaps if there is ever a real self-defense situation that they can protect themselves. Childhood obesity is a big thing right now, and as it well should be. And so perhaps they're looking for an alternative to the PE program at school that just got cut. So part of what you have to do in the introductory process is you have to make sure that if it's an introductory for a child, that on the child side, that they feel comfortable, that they're not intimidated, that they enjoy the class, they build rapport with the instructor, hopefully they build some rapport with some of the other kids in the school, and that they have a lot of fun. On the parent side, they've got to see their child have fun. They've got to see their child be comfortable, but they've got to hear about the benefits of the program. And again, it's the sales language is features versus benefits. You're not selling the structure of the class. You're not selling how you're teaching a front kick or a side kick or a grab. What you're talking to the parent about is, how would you feel if Joey, when he's moving into middle school, is completely confident and he's focused, he's immune to negative peer pressure. It's language like that. So from a big overview, you've really got to purge your thinking of talking about who your instructor was, what your style is, what your lineage is, what specific techniques you learned. The other thing you've got to purge yourself of is the fact that you're trying to teach them something in the first and second intro other than teach them that they love the program and want to enroll. So you're not trying, and you're especially not trying to teach them any complicated techniques. What you're wanting to do is give them the emotional experience of participating as a student. And you're teaching them enough stuff so that they moved and they sweated a little bit and they had a lot of fun. And you're giving them an overview of the outcomes of the benefits of the program without getting bogged down at all into the features. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Yeah. So let me plug in just a couple of details there that are really important in the context of the thread that we have on the board as well. At no point did you talk about schedule. At no point did you talk about pricing. At no point did you talk about, you know, how many pads they're going to need or what size uniform they need. All that stuff is irrelevant, right? The only thing that's relevant in the first introductory lesson is exactly what you said. And the way I described it in a little worksheet was rapport, needs, and problems. So your objective in the first intro, number one, is to build rapport with the family, with the parent and the kid. Number two is to find out what their needs and wants are or what their problems are. And just like we talked about in the information call, again, if you haven't listened to that, go back into the teleconference archive on the member's website and download that and listen to that one. It's very important. But if Mrs. Jones, and let me back up a half a second, the mechanism that you're using in your introductories, that, you know, your student information sheet or whatever it is, should have ample places for them to tell you what they want out of your program, right? And then when you're sitting down with them, before you do the little kick and punch piece of it with the son or daughter, with the child, you should have a brief conversation with mom or dad and say, you know, Mrs. Jones, let me ask you a question. Parents come into our martial arts school for many different reasons, and they have many different objectives for their son or daughter, you know, studying in a program like this. What specifically is it that you'd like to see him accomplish in this type of a program? Now, you should already know that from the information call, but sometimes they forget, and sometimes it's different, and, you know, you never know, right? So, again, if you haven't listened to that info call one, go back and listen to that, because how you respond to those answers is very important, too. So if Mrs. Jones says, well, you know, his teacher tells me he's, you know, he needs a little bit more focus in class, and he's just a little bit, you know, unfocused, well, I don't want to say the worst thing in the world you can do, because the worst thing in the world you could do would be just to take this, you know, unconfident, unfocused child that has never been in your school before and throw them to the wolves, right? Throw them out on the floor with everybody else and the instructor barking orders and all that other stuff. I mean, that's just, you know, emotionally a very difficult thing for a child to understand. Plus, it doesn't get across the specific benefits that you want to get across in an introductory lesson. So then the second thing I was going to say about that is if they say, well, you know, he's having a little bit of, you know, focus challenges in school and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, you don't just want to let it go, right? You don't just want to say, oh, well, great, well, this program definitely helps that, and then up and teach the lesson the same way you would have normally, right? So you have to take all that into account. Now your brain has to be thinking, okay, focus. How do I structure this introductory lesson to not only help him with his focus today, but help them see that this program will help him develop his focus over long term, right? And then the vocabulary you use, the phraseology you use back to the parent. If the parent said, well, you know, his elementary school teacher was telling me that, you know, he's having a little trouble focusing in class and we're a little bit concerned about that. Well, see, that's a big wide open door, and you should feel free to walk through the door. And you should question the parent and ask questions like, wow, I mean, you know, that sounds like it's a pretty significant issue. You know, how is that affecting him so far in school? Has that been affecting his grades negatively? Oh, yeah, you know, his grades are starting to slip a little bit. Oh, I see. Well, that's not good. Is it affecting, do you think, his personal life at home and his relationships with, you know, family and friends? Yeah, you know, it has been. It's kind of, you know, see now what you're doing is making the problem real for the parent, right? If you just gloss over it and you go, oh, yeah, no problem, we can fix that, and then you get to the lesson, see, it's just like the Ebenezer Scrooge story, right? The ghosts that visited Ebenezer Scrooge were master salesmen because they showed Ebenezer that he really did have a wound. Now, it's been scabbed over and, you know, half-healed for a while, but he was really a damaged person, right? And it took the ghost, it took the three ghosts to come by and remind him how damaged he really was and remind him how important it would be to not live your life that way, right? Well, this is the same thing. We have to make sure that we emotionalize these problems. And it's not about being a slick used car salesman guy. What it is it's about really helping the parent understand how important this program really is. Because I got to tell you, if the only reason they're there is for Johnny to be entertained and for him to learn some kicks and punches and, you know, have a peer group, you know, that just ain't worth much. But if it's really about this real problem, this real perceived challenge, this real perceived problem that Johnny has, see, then price is almost irrelevant, right? If you can effectively communicate that to the parent, then really pricing just almost goes away altogether, right? So my bullet points, again, for that first intro were rapport, needs, and problems. Once you've had that discussion, you've had sort of that frame, then you teach them the first lesson, which maybe it's 10 minutes, maybe it's 11 minutes, maybe it's 9 minutes. You know, it doesn't have to be a lot of time. But like you said, the kid has to be, you know, sweating and smiling and laughing and, you know, having a good time. And at the same time, you're sort of evaluating him and making sure that he's a good fit for the school and for the class. Then you reconvene with the parent and set the appointment for the second intro, right? So you know, some sort of phraseology like, well, you know, Johnny did a great job today. Let's go ahead and get you set up for your second lesson, at which point, and this is the important point, this is the important part, at which point we'll answer any other questions that you might have about the program. We'll go over all the logistics like scheduling and tuition options and all of those other things. So what time would work for you, Thursday at 5 or at 7, right? And you schedule the second intro appointment. So I've just now, in essence, sidestepped any questions that I might get about price, schedule, about commitment, about anything that could be perceived as being negative or could damage the rapport that I've built, you know, so far. I've completely sidestepped all that stuff, and I've told them that I'll handle all that stuff, but I'll do it at the next lesson, right? Now, the big purpose for that, too, by the way, is I'm never going to do a price presentation or an enrollment presentation unless I have all the decision makers there. And I'm certainly not going to do it with just Mom and have her come home and tell Dad everything I said, because that never works, right? I mean, she's never going to remember all the stuff that I said and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I know that might be a little bit micro. You know, that might be a little, you know, small details that are irritating in some cases. But does that make sense? So the first intro is about building rapport, identifying needs and problems, teaching the lesson, then going through the mechanics of setting up the second intro, right? Mr. Oliver, anything you'd elaborate on that?
Yeah, and I do think maybe we need to get into the more specific step-by-step detail, frankly. And I think there's a lot of things. When we train our staff on, let's say, just first intro, is it's the script for the confirmation, well, let me step back. It's the script for the preparation on the info call, right? Then it's the script for the confirmation call and the plan for when you call them, how to get hold of them. And even at that step, it's making sure everybody understands that it's accomplishing a result, not taking an action. In other words, you don't call and leave a voicemail on a message machine and think you've confirmed the intro, and you don't talk to the babysitter, you talk to the, you know, the parent. Then it's the script for greeting them. And see, all these little details are important. So you want to greet them within three steps of the door. You want to greet them by name. You want to, if it's a child, you want to talk to the child first, then talk to the parents. You want to explain to them what's happening for the next 30 or 40 minutes. And again, they should be in and out of the school within 30 or 40 minutes, not 3 hours. One of the things that we didn't say yet, but I always like them to be put immediately into a uniform. And a lot of people get all bogged down into, you know, the cost of the uniform. But I'm going to give everybody who walks in the door a free uniform, because it's what salespeople call an ownership close. It makes them feel like they're a student. And so rather than having them feel like they're just testing it out, it makes them feel like they've already enrolled. Then there's the structure for the introductory class. And the truth is your best, most exciting, most engaging instructor should be teaching the class. I see some people put a 15-year-old brown belt on teaching intros because they think anybody can teach intros. They're only teaching them once they back fist and front kick. Well, no, it should be the absolute best person in the school because, frankly, if you're doing it right, each new enrollment is worth $3,000 to $5,000 for your school. I mean, it's literally if you let a 15-year-old mess up 10 intros this month, you're out $30,000 to $50,000. So it should be your first highest priority. The second thing is you've got to make sure, and you walk through them with it briefly, but one, they never get left on their own in the school, really, without some prep of what's going on. But two is that after the first intro, they're prepped for coming back next time with money and with a decision having been made so that they will finalize their enrollment. The other thing on both the confirmation call and on that reschedule, you've got to make sure, if it's for a child, that mom and dad are there, and sometimes keep in mind it's mom, it's the new husband or the stepfather, it's the dad, it's the new mom or the stepmom, and sometimes it's grandma who's going to be writing the check. So you've got to get to the root of who's going to be involved with transportation, who's going to be involved with supporting the child, who's going to be involved with paying for the lessons, and make sure that they're all there so that you're not trying to have a conversation without the person who can make a decision in the room. And then we haven't gotten really into the specifics of what the introductory class looks like. And to make it as broad as possible across stylistic approaches, I guess the first part is maybe the outline of what we do, which is pretty much appropriate for anybody who teaches Kung Fu, Taekwondo, Kempo, Shotokan, whatever. Probably not very appropriate if you're predominantly bringing adults in to learn Krav Maga or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But if you're in one of those types of styles that are similar to what we're doing primarily, is to me, the outline looks more or less like this. In any speech you do, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, then I'm going to tell you, then I'm going to tell you what I told you, right? So the intro has the same format. We're going to give you a little overview about what's going on with the class today. We're going to teach you a little class, and we're going to do a little review of the class. And then for us, physically, we do attention, bow, or charyo kunge in Korean terminology. We do ready position. We do a ready stance. Now, we can never call it fighting stance, but we do a ready stance. So we're standing sideways with your hands up. We teach them a front leg front kick, and we do it in three counts, and then we do it in one count. We have them kicking x-ray papers. We have them learning a loud yell, and we teach them back fist, and we teach them high block. Now, that's the entirety of the physical skills. So a high block, a back fist, done three count, done one count, a front kick, done three count, done one count, attention, bow, courtesy, position, ready stance. Now, notice that we don't say fighting, we don't say striking, we don't say, break their nose, we don't say aim for the bridge of the nose. There's all kinds of very inflammatory language that I hear martial arts instructors get into, even things like saying fighting stance. Is if I'm a parent of a 7-year-old boy or girl, I'm not bringing my child to learn how to fight. I'm bringing them to be confident, disciplined, and focused, and I'm also bringing them to not have problems with a bully. Now, in that parent's mind, or at least in mom's mind, not having problem with the bully doesn't have anything to do with being able to break their nose and knock them on their ass. And frankly, most adults don't think of self-defense as being get into a fight. They think of self-defense as being awareness. They think of self-defense as being some quick, easy thing you can do to get them to release you. they don't think of it as you're going to be getting punched in the nose and blocking and, you know, grappling and choking people out in almost all cases. And if you ruin that delusion, you start to have problems. Now, more importantly, in the kids' intro especially, the important thing to do is to focus on benefit while keeping the child moving. So you want to be teaching the child the student creed, offering that they can test for their white belt to the next class so they learn the student creed, having them say yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am, teaching them bow, teaching them the respectful way to behave in the school. You're doing all of that type of stuff while not sitting the child down and doing a 12-minute lecture on whatever, because that just bores them to tears.
Yeah,
so anything to add to that?
Well, you know, there were two things I think that you said that are important to not miss, is that in the phraseology of the, you know, the entire intro lesson, it should all be framed around, or at least a majority of it should be framed around what the parent told you they wanted anyway. Okay, so it doesn't do you much good to have a parent sitting in front of you who thinks that Johnny has a bit of a focus challenge in school, and for you to go into the intro lesson and talk all about self-defense, right? I mean, it's incongruent with what the needs of the market are, incongruent with what the needs of the parent that are sitting right in front of you are. So I think it's very important that you do mechanically all of the things that you said, all of the pieces of physical, you know, and all that stuff, while relating them each and every time back to how this helps you build your focus, how it helps you build your self-confidence if that's what they're looking for, et cetera, right? And then the other piece of what you said that is really important not to miss is when you're closing that first intro, when that first intro is over, when the lesson part is over and you're reconvening with the parent, before they walk out the door, they have to understand that they're, well, let me pause for a second. When you're analyzing where people are dropping off and why they're dropping off, it's important never to allow someone or force someone to make a compound decision, right? And I think Hopkins calls them compound decisions. And a compound decision is when they have to decide about more than one thing at a time. So, for example, if you hand somebody a price sheet and a schedule, right, you've just given them two things to be concerned about, two decisions to make. Now they have to decide whether they can make the classes, and they have to decide whether they can afford it or not, or whether they're willing to pay that amount or not, right? So that's two decisions all at once. You never want to have that. You never want to do that, because what if you hand them both sheets of paper and they just say no and walk out the door? Well, most school owners would assume that it's because they can't afford it, right? But in reality, you have no idea why they said no. They had to make too many decisions all at once. It could have been the schedule. It could have been the price. It could have been the combination of both. It could have been neither. But you never had the opportunity to work yourself through the process to find out exactly what the challenge was. Okay. So what you want to do is have there be no other points of confusion or decision that happen in the first intro, except do they like you? And do they value what you do, right? That's all they should be thinking. They shouldn't be thinking about, can I make the class schedule? They shouldn't be thinking about, you know, what happens when he's a brown belt and he has to break boards for the first time and he hurts his hand. They shouldn't be thinking about any of that stuff. They should be in a complete vacuum of decisions about any of those things. And the only reason that they wouldn't come back for their second lesson, if there's a reason at all, the only reason that they would have is they didn't think what you were doing was congruent with what they wanted, right? Because they didn't know anything differently. They didn't know the prices. They didn't know anything else, right? So I think that's extremely important to relate the physical to what it is that the family wants, what it is that the parent wants. And then it's very important that you handle closing that first introductory lesson and scheduling a second intro appropriately so that you're not confusing them. You're not giving them 100 things to think about. The only thing that they should be thinking is, this was great. You know, he really looked like he enjoyed it. I can't wait to come back for the second lesson and see what else they're going to do, right? And then the logistical piece of that is you have to make sure that they bring all the decision makers and that they're ready to make a financial, that they know ahead of time that they're going to, that they should be prepared to make a financial decision and to make a decision that day. you never want to be in the chase game. You never want to have them. And again, if you handle it this way, if you do two introductory lessons, you don't have this challenge. But in the first introductory lesson, let's say, for example, you chose not to do two introductory lessons and you just did one. Well, you still wouldn't want to go through the entire introductory lesson, give them the schedule, give them the price sheet, give them all the details, and say, well, what do you think? And they say, well, we have to go home and think about it. And you just say, okay. And they walk away and, you know, go home and do whatever they're going to do, which usually isn't think about it, right? Yeah. They've already decided.
Toby, yeah. why don't we address what you just brought up specifically for a second, and then maybe go back to a few real, you know, important but smaller details. But the thing you just said is, I've been predicating the conversation I've been having here on you do intro one, intro two after the second intro, in other words, same day, that's when you do the enrollment conference. And there's you know, several schools of thought on this. And I'm not suggesting that there's one right way. There's the way that I'm most comfortable with, which is do an intro, prep them for the second intro, make sure all the decision makers are there, and do the enrollment after the second intro. One of the things that I think is a difference here is in that process, we're asking for basically $400 or $500 down, $200 a month, 12-month contract. And, you know, I have friends and associates in the industry who are very successful doing first intro, enrolling after the first intro, in many cases on like a 6-month enrollment within they're upgraded in a couple months. And we've seen schools that do 5-week intros, 5-lesson intros, 6-lesson intros, you know, a variety of other things like that. And I think what's clearly and definitely a best practice is you've got to enroll them when they're ready and not wait any longer. And you also don't want to enroll them either too early or without the decision makers there. So that having been said, I've never seen anybody who consistently does, let's say, enroll you for a month, wait to the end of the month, and then do a real enrollment. I've never seen that be the right way to do it. And, you know, in all these cases, and including we just talked about the Haiti flyer, on the Haiti flyer deal, is it's a 4 or 5 week program, but you still enroll them after the first or second lesson. You don't wait until they're 5 weeks into the program. You certainly don't bring them in and say, in 5 weeks we're going to be talking, because that just doesn't happen. And, you know, many of the schools that some of the guys on the call may be familiar with, you know, Steve LaValle or Bill Clark or Keith Hafner, we've all had the same experience of offering a VIP pass, a 4-week pass, 2-week pass, whatever it might be, but always enrolling them on the first or second visit, not enrolling them in 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. So, you know, and then that having been said, is what you're saying is exactly right, is all the way through the enrollment process, you're constantly pre-qualified. And what most martial artists are really bad at is they're really bad at ask a question and shut up and listen to the answer. You know, and all people tend to be bad at that, but it's so important to ask a leading question, listen to the answer, because that's now going to, you know, going to tell you, you know, where to go next. If you have a, let's say, an adult who comes in for lessons for themselves and you ask a leading question, you may well find out that it's a guy you thought was coming in for lessons for himself, and really he wants him and his girlfriend or him and his wife to do it. And if you try to enroll him by himself, you end up with him going home to check and see if she's going to do it with him because he really wants it to be something that they do together. You've got to know the answers to those things long before you ask them the closing questions about contract and price and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And let me maybe reiterate what you just said on the 4 week, 5 week, 6 week thing. And a lot of people operate under that model, and it's very challenging. Look, the frame that we have is that we think if we teach such great lessons, that they're going to be more likely to enroll after 2 or 3 weeks of lessons, not less likely to enroll. When in reality, it's almost always the opposite. And it does, and that's no reflection of how good of an instructor you are or how impactful your lessons are. It's no reflection on that whatsoever. What it's a reflection of is human nature. We're dealing with humans here, and humans behave in certain ways, right? And one of the things that we do is we get very distracted, and we get very busy, and we get very overwhelmed by things, right? And you have to you don't want to screw up their thinking about you at the beginning of the relationship. You want to make sure that you frame everything correctly. So let's say, for example, I allow this person to think that they're going to wait 5 weeks and then enroll at the end of the 5 weeks, right? Well, think about the damage you've just done to their psychology, right? Now, they're going to be driving down the street after they leave your school, after they just signed up. Okay, they just signed up for their 5 week program. They get in the car, they're all excited about doing karate. They drive out of your parking lot, they take a right, they go to the stoplight, and they take a left. They take another right at the next stoplight, pretty much having completely forgotten about you. And they drive down the road, and they see a big lawn sign on the side of the road that says, Pop Warner football starts in 3 weeks. Well, see, now in their head, they're thinking, well, I'm just doing karate for 5 weeks, so maybe we'll do this Pop Warner thing afterwards. Let's go see what that's all about. And then they take a right, and they follow all the arrows, and they go talk to the Pop Warner guy, right? Now, none of that has anything to do with how great your lessons were or how much you could change their life over time. What it is it's human behavior. They haven't made a congruent decision yet that they're going to do martial arts for some period of time, for a year, for 5 years, to accomplish their black belt, whatever length of time it is. They just psychologically haven't made that connection yet. They haven't made that commitment to themselves. And the longer you allow them to not make that commitment to themselves, the more you allow all of these other distractions to get in their way, right? All of which are external or completely unconnected with how great of an instructor you are or how great your program is. So I could be the best martial arts instructor in the country, put all my people, make them all 5 weeks before they can enroll in my program, and my enrollment ratio at best might be 20%, right? Or I can build a different ship. I can build an introductory process that lets them mature and enrolls them when they're ready, which is usually within a couple of lessons, and I can have enrollment ratios in the 80% range. So again, when we're having really close personal relationships with school owners, like in our coaching groups, Peak Performers Inner Circle, and consulting days, these are the very first systems that we take a look at, because in many cases, if these first couple of, you could be a great instructor, you could have the best curriculum in the country, you could be a charismatic, amazing teacher, but if these initial, 101 processes are weak, then it doesn't matter. You're just never going to have the volume of students that you really need to have or that you really should have just because systemically they're not set up to think about you in the right way. So I think that's right. That would be the only thing that I would want to reiterate, is that you can't allow them to think about you like soccer, baseball, or football, in any way, or then, you'll be compared to that permanently in their psychology, so in their psyche. So I think that's pretty useful.
And let's not skip over the adult market. We do have lots of members who focus on that predominantly or secondarily. And all the same things that we're saying about the kids market is equally as true for the adult market. See, so many times you have, let's say you have a 35-year-old woman come to your school by herself to take lessons. See, she's not any more interested than the parents and the child in all of the details of your art and all the details of what she's going to be learning, all of that stuff, right? Really, she's there for an outcome. And, you know, her outcome might be to get in better shape, or it might be to feel much more confident and be able to not have a situation where she gets attacked, or to be able to defend herself if, God forbid, she did. Or it might just be to be more confident in everything she does, or it might be she's tired of the gym and wants something that's just more interesting to do. And you've got to not get bogged down in the specific technical details of what you do. And I keep drilling that point home because all of us, and, you know, I've been training since 1969, and so that's, I guess, 40 years as of last month or something like that. And, you know, if you've been training for a long time, you think what you do is very interesting, and you think your instructors are very important, and you think your lineage is very impressive, and you think your resume is unimpeachable. But see, the people coming in the front door, it's what's in it for them. And what's in it for them, none of that stuff matters in most all cases. And I'll say it more strongly. If more than 5% of your intros are interested in that means you're not very good at marketing, because you're just waiting for people to come to you because of, you know, what you're hanging out your banner as, not going out and getting them in the most appropriate way, you know, what Kennedy calls marketing in the vacuum. So, you know, and Toby, you know it, we hear some schools and they say, well, I only get 5 calls a month, but every one of them is looking for exactly what I do. Well, their 5 calls a month are because people searched for their widget online or in the Yellow Pages and found them and came to them. But the thing is, why aren't you having 30, 40, 50 intros a month? And if you are predominant with people who are, in fact, interested in what you're doing, it means you're not very good at being out there marketing in most cases.
Yeah, that absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, by the way, it's a bit of a tangent, but what you said is exactly true and extremely important for a new intro. The new guys don't care, right? The guy who isn't part of your school yet, who hasn't psychologically committed to the program yet, all that stuff, your lineage, all that stuff is irrelevant to them. Now, once they're a student, then all of that stuff becomes extremely important, because that's part of the culture that they stay for. See, people buy. This is a 40,000 foot in the air deal, and I hope everybody takes me the right way. People buy to solve a problem, but they stay for relationship, mm-hmm. right? See, how long does it really take? I mean, really. How long does it really take to teach an adult to be able to defend themselves in most every situation? I don't know, what, 3-4 weeks, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, you can teach them, you know, I mean, you can teach them how to defend from distance, from close up, and a little bit on the ground, probably in just a few weeks, maybe a couple of months, right? Now, they're certainly not going to learn all the intricacies of an art or of a style or any of that stuff. But, you know, really, if all they really wanted once they got in was just to learn to defend themselves, yeah, you can accomplish that in a few weeks, right? But why they stay is because of all of the other intricacies, and because of the mastery process, and because of the relationship they have with you and stuff, right? That's all great. But don't put the cart before the horse. All that stuff comes after. All that stuff comes once they've made a psychological commitment to being in the school, and that they're quote-unquote bought into you. They're bought into what you believe and bought into what you teach. After that, then all that stuff is great. But never before that. Because, frankly, it only gets in the way.
Yeah. Well, and again, or maybe to reemphasize, I'm not discounting the value of all of that stuff in order to have them appreciate the value of training and to have them appreciate the value of the school. It just does nothing to help your case through the enrollment process unless you already are dealing with somebody who's an enthusiast, who already is specifically interested in what it is you're doing. So you want to, and again, I think especially year two, year three, you're really emphasizing that and really anchoring them into the thing on a long-term basis and really educating them into all those things, but just not, you know, lesson one, lesson two, enrollment conference. It's all about the benefit that they're looking for and showing them how to get there. You know, the other aspect here, and it's will merit us continuing to give very specifics, but many martial artists have gotten good at talking about buzzwords that they think that people want to hear, but not terribly good at explaining how they actually go about accomplishing it. And in fact, unfortunately, many times, and hopefully this doesn't apply to most our members because we are providing those tools, but many times they're not actually good at giving the benefit. They're just good at talking the buzzwords of what they think people want to learn. And part of the enrollment and the renewal process is getting really, really adept at explaining how your program goes about developing, for instance, confidence, how it goes about developing, you know, self-discipline, how it goes about developing a high level of cardiovascular, aerobic, anaerobic conditioning. It is the more that you can truly explain, we're going to do A, B, and C, which leads to these benefits that you want, and creating a linkage, and the more you can tie it in physically. I mean, and that's why in the intro we teach the child attention and bow courtesy, because we're teaching them, and it's about respect, and it's about self-discipline, being able to hold still, and it's about listening skills and being able to pay attention and focus their eyes and sit up and focus their body on the process. All of those things are exceedingly important, and the more that you can get better and better and better at explaining not just the buzzwords of what people want to learn, but in fact the process that you go through to get them there, the better off you'll be.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple glaring examples of that is at one of our shows, a couple of shows ago, I was talking to a guy, and his whole thing was life skills, right? Life skills, life skills, life skills. Every other word out of his mouth was life skills, right? Which is great. I mean, you know, in reality, that's pretty important. But then, you know, it didn't really pass the smell test, right? So I said, well, you know, it sounds like you've got the script right. Let me ask you, how are you delivering that in class? And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, you're claiming that you teach life skills. How is it that you're delivering that? How are you making sure that that actually happens at home? Because if what we do, I think I said this on stage last time at the Extreme Success Academy, if what we claim to do, we actually do, and we're not tracking it at home, if we don't have some mechanism to make sure that what we're teaching them is going home with them, then we're liars, right? Then we're just like, you know, hoping they do it, and that never works, right? So I think that's exactly right. It's not just about memorizing the script to be able to persuade somebody that you teach life skills. It's congruency in actually delivering. And that's a delivery challenge. You know, it's not much of an enrollment challenge, but it doesn't take long, for you to get a pretty bad reputation in a community if you don't deliver what you promise. Now, I don't have any problem with somebody, you know, who used to be enrolled in one of our schools that says, man, you know, it was really expensive, but it was really good. I don't have any problem with that at all, right? But I have a big problem with, you know, someone who says, oh, yeah, we used to go there, and it was real cheap, it was real economical, but, you know, they just really never did what they, you know, they really never, you know, helped my son. See, that sucks, right? I'd much rather have the first than the second. And I think that's a big piece of your instructor training and all that stuff, but it's directly related to how you enroll these folks.
Well, and there's a bigger issue as well, which is everything needs to be congruent around what your message is, right? Now, if you're teaching predominantly adults hardcore self-defense, what that means to you is different than if you're teaching predominantly 7-year-olds and you're teaching them about confidence and focus and discipline and character. And so, many different schools can have what's right for them be appropriate. If you're teaching Tai Chi or internal arts, It's different than if you're teaching Krav Maga. But everything that happens with the instructors, the way the instructors look, the way the instructors speak, the appearance of the instructors, all has to be congruent with what you're selling. And so, one example is if you were walking into a health club and they're teaching lose weight, be in shape, high level of cardiovascular conditioning in a tremendous weight loss program, and the person who's trying to pitch you on it is the instructor who's 50 pounds overweight, that's incongruent. And so you have to be as congruent as possible along the way. I've often talked about the fact that in a school, everything counts. So if you want to be at the upper end of the price range, you can't have, fingerprints all over the front doors. But also, if you want to be teaching, let's say, 7-year-olds confidence, focus, and discipline, talking about academic results, talking about being immune to negative peer pressure, you got to make sure the instructor that's in front of them exemplifies what you're talking about. You know, on our side, I don't want an instructor with a ponytail. I don't want an instructor with tattoos. I don't want an instructor with earrings, male or female, teaching the intro. I want them to be in a clean pressed uniform. They better not have worked out in the uniform and have it sweaty and stinky. I want to make sure that they're well groomed, that their fingernails are trimmed, that they look the part. And again, if you're teaching Krav Maga to adults or some other adult fitness or defense oriented, it's different. And so now the adult male with a ponytail as the instructor may be appropriately congruent, or with, five tattoos may be appropriately congruent to the audience, but not if they're overweight, or not if they can't look you in the eye and they're not confident. So it's important to evaluate the receptionist, the assistant instructors, the head instructor, the program director or branch manager. It's important to choose how you dress, how your staff dresses, and it's completely appropriate to dictate everything from how long their hair is allowed to be to what their language usage is. And if they're not terribly well educated, but it's part of what you want to project, it's quite all right to put them on the lesson of the week and be teaching them better grammar and to be improving their overall sense of being a well-educated leader, because that's part of what you're selling in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, that extends obviously to the intro, right? Because the person that impacts them in that first intro is the most important part of it, right? It's the first experience in the school. But you can extend that congruency all the way out into the marketing that you're doing, all the way back into what their experience is long term. You have to speak their language. I mean, everything has to be congruent to the customer. And, I think that's something that, again, we talked about this a little bit at the Extreme Success Academy, is it's all about them. It's not about you. And the more your marketing appeals looks like them, the better you are, right? The more the artwork in your ads or the pictures on the wall or the website, whatever it is, the more it looks like them, the better off it is. And, one of the examples was Weight Watchers does a lot of direct mail, and they do a lot of, they're very sophisticated marketers. Frankly, Weight Watchers is a pretty sophisticated company. And I remember, I believe it was Dan, was talking about one of the campaigns that he had worked on. And one of the direct mail campaigns that kind of flopped was one that had a very attractive, very slender woman on it, as the artwork on the ad. And that was the immediate sort of red flag to Dan. And he said, well, look, this woman doesn't look like the women that you're trying to get into the thing. Not only doesn't it look like them, doesn't look like something that they believe that they could even ever accomplish, right? So replace her with someone who's still attractive, but, not as petite, someone who's normal looking, an average human, an average woman is much more attractive, because it looks like, that looks to them like it's something that they can actually accomplish. And in our version of that, everything that impacts the market, from the marketing all the way back to the intro, has to look exactly like what they want their 9-year-old to become, right? And with the popularity and prevalence of all this UFC stuff, you know, I got to tell you, even the adult students in the schools or, parents that watch the thing, even the ones who like it, you know, I think if you ask them, they don't want their 9-year-old to look like, Brock Lesnar or, those guys, Now, if they had to pick, they'd probably say Matt Hughes or, George St. Pierre or something like that, right? The clean-cut type folks,
Again, we've got to make sure that we recognize that it's what's appropriate to the market. I mean, what's appropriate to a school that's an internal soft style, let's say predominantly teaching Tai Chi to 50-year-old women? What the appropriate instructor and the appropriate look of the school and so forth there is different from a school that's predominantly, let's say, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Krav Maga teaching predominantly adult men. And both of those are inappropriate for a school that's teaching predominantly elementary kids and their parents. And so you have to just be aware that it's got to be appropriate all the way around. And when we make the full circle back around to talking about price point, is if you are trying to charge at the upper end of the spectrum, which I believe you should, a couple $100 a month, you've got to make sure that the school and the people in the school look, that looks believable. And it doesn't have to be chandeliers and marble floors, but it has to be clean, it has to be presentable, it has to bear a good first impression. It has to, to fit with that image. It's something that surely, at the high end of the spectrum, Tiger Shulman in New York has done a fabulous job of that with his schools. And again, I don't think you need to spend that much money in order to be congruent with those price points. But you can't have it be sloppy, ugly, the carpet's torn, the windows are dirty, the mirrors are dirty, and you're charging premium pricing. And the instructor drove up in a beat-up old Mazda that's sitting in front of the parking lot with smoke coming out the hood. It's gotta fit with what you're expecting people to think of the school and the environment. It's the same reason why Lexus is very concerned about how their dealerships look. Mercedes is very, concerned about how their dealerships look. Porsche is very concerned about how their dealership looks. And at the opposite end of the spectrum, on the low end, there's a lot less concern about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think we've accomplished what I really wanted to accomplish today. And again, for the folks who were involved in the discussion on the board, I think it's really important that you understand that you're not the only people in this situation. It's a very, very common, diagnosis, I guess. When you really start to dig into a school statistics and you start to look at exactly where the gaps are, you start to really see that if you can tweak up those processes, if you can move them smoothly to an introductory lesson, either 1, 2, or 3 or whatever it is, whatever you've seen to be most successful for you. But you've eliminated compound decision-making. The only thing that they've accomplished, what you've accomplished in the first introductory lesson is building rapport, identifying needs and problems, and showing them how you can help, and extraneous from any other distraction, built rapport with them, right? Then in the second lesson, you've got all the decision makers there. They've come ready to make a financial decision, even though they know they don't know what the tuition is yet. They still know that they're coming that day to enroll. They're there to make a decision. You've got all the people involved in that. And then perhaps in another call in the future, we can go over that second introductory lesson and go into the close and all that stuff. But ultimately, you never, ever, ever, ever want them to just have collected all this data and then go home and think about it, because number one, they never will. They'll just never think about it, right? It's just how humans are. We get busy, and number two, you're now in the compound decision-making process, where making more than one decision at a time never works really well because they get confused and, you know, there's too many things to think about and any one little thing could be a problem, but if handled in order, could be overcome. So, but if they're at home, you know, extracted from your presence and your ability to communicate with them, you can't overcome any of those challenges or any of those objections. So you have to make sure that you nail each one of them down as you go down the list. And again, we can accomplish that on another call in the future. But I hope it was useful for everybody. We do have just a few minutes left. Mr. Oliver, if you have a couple of minutes to stay with us, that's great. We could possibly open up for a little question and answer.
Sure. Let's leave everybody with a couple of points, though. If you don't know what a reasonable benchmark is, then you don't know whether you're doing well or poorly, right? And so, and I can make this complicated because different sources of intros are going to have different conversion rates and so forth. You know, but in the simplest possible terms, if somebody is coming to you, they're responding to an ad, they're calling from a direct mail campaign, they're coming from a referral, you should be able to enroll into your program at least half the people that you contact with. And you really should have essentially 100% of the people who come in for a first intro come back for a second intro. You should have more or less 80% of those who come in for a second intro enroll. And of the people who end up in your pipeline, of those who contacted you, you should get at least a 50% conversion. And if you start ratcheting up the price and your ratios go down, it's probably not because of the actual price point. It's probably because of whether what you're doing is congruent with that or because of your belief system. And so part of getting started on this thing is understanding what the benchmark should be. The other point is just making sure that you have the right attitude from a standpoint I'll use the word sales, but it's really the right attitude from the standpoint of dealing with prospective students is no matter how serious somebody is as a prospective student, no matter how excited the parents are, we all have a built-in defense mechanism to go think about it, to go slow, to not sign a contract, to not pay money today if they can put it off to tomorrow. And all the kinds of mechanisms and systems that we teach along the way is designed to teach them truly about what your program is in reality. Again, not to create an advertisement that's different from the intro, but not to create an intro that's different from what the program is all about, because that's fraught with failure if you entice them with bait that's different than what you do. But also it's designed to help them get past that natural hesitation to move forward, because an awful lot of people who would have benefited from your program, who would have benefited from the thing, who could afford it, who had been a wonderful student, get lost just because you don't handle them smoothly and don't present it properly or don't enroll them when they're ready to enroll. And, you know, they don't, when they say they'll be back, they don't come back just because nobody ever goes home and thinks about it. Their life is busy and they go spend an hour on Facebook and they go to a movie or they go watch some new TV show and get hung up on the latest American Idol or something and forget all about you. So it's the sales skills, which is important for every owner-operator, important for every master instructor. And if you want yet another way to think about it this way. You can't be a leader without followers. And so every master instructor has to be good at selling your prospects on your program, but also selling your students on why they should stick with you and why they should put their trust in you and why they should continue on the black belt, second degree black belt, third degree black belt, and beyond. So it's extremely important.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. So we do have just a few. If you do have any specific questions about, you know, introductory process, the Haiti thing, you know, Quantum Leap, anything that we've covered today, or anything else, frankly, go ahead and hit 6 on your phone, and you'll be unmuted, and you can ask that question, and I'll be able to identify you by number here. So just hit 6 on your phone and ask your question, and we'll get to that in order. While you're hitting 6 on your phone, last thing I'll mention is, again, two things. If you haven't been to the NAPMA discussion forum, you should go back there quickly and, you know, surf around a little bit, perhaps post a question or an answer, and go to your profile and set up your daily digest so that that way the emails will just come straight to you and you don't have to worry about going to them. Logistical item number two is if you haven't reserved your seat for the NAPMA Quantum Leap yet, huge opportunity. We really have some cool stuff happening this year. I've got some really creative new marketing systems that have been working really well, some marketing pieces that have been working really well to share with everybody, and some examples. So that'll be useful. Make sure that you get to NAPMAQuantumLeap.com and get registered for that.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but two things we didn't mention, though, I guess, is one is in the member website, there will be the artwork for the Haiti flyer, correct?
Yep.
We didn't mention the exact artwork and the structure of that, but that'll be available for all members. Two is we didn't mention today that I'm going to be in California tomorrow, and any members who are there or have friends who are in the area, please invite them to either San Diego, Los Angeles, or to San Francisco, which is San Diego on Thursday, Los Angeles on Friday, San Francisco on Saturday. I think the URL to register is NAPMA Seminar, N-A-P-M-A Seminar.com. So we didn't mention that, and we have a couple of other special things coming up for members only. One of them I know is our Easy School Supplies guys. I had an email from them that they're working with 158,000 kids in Dallas. And we're going to be, and that's just one of the many, many, many cities that they're aggressively in, and it's something we're going to be rolling out for NAPMA members along with our exclusive arrangement with the production studio for Karate Kid. So we have some exciting things coming up with the Karate Kid movie. We've got some exciting, very exciting things coming up with the Easy School Supplies guys. And we'll be right on top of all of that for everybody.
Absolutely, absolutely. So any specific questions, please, on your phone, and we'll let you in to ask that question. I heard a beep. If you're from a 305 area code, I think you're on.
Hey, Toby, it's Dwight Woods in Miami. How are you?
Hey, Dwight, what's going on, man?
Good. Can you break down for me again the model? You get the info call, and what's the offer that you make to get the person into the school? I heard you talking about intro one and intro two, and so I was just wondering if the conversation on the telephone is leading them directly to intro one, or is there something before that?
So why don't I take that? Hey, Dwight, long time
sure.
No see.
Hey, how are you?
Good. You know, the first part of it, the answer to that, I think, Dwight, is there's all different types of introductory offers that, you know, I've seen different schools use that work just great, from from at one end one free or two free lessons to something like this Haiti thing, which is 4 or 5 weeks for $49 or $69 to even 6 or 8 weeks for $99, right? And with all of that, I think the first premise is you do the enrollment on the first or second lesson. You don't ever let them come in thinking, and when I say come in, you don't let them continue through the introductory process thinking that they're going to do 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 9 weeks before enrolling. So I think that's the first part of the answer. The second part of the answer on the info call is to just keep in mind you're really trying to accomplish two things, right? You're trying to talk to them enough that you build rapport, that they feel like you've answered their questions, that they feel like they're comfortable coming into the school. And the second part is you're looking to schedule a come down to the school and take a class, definite appointment for which they're likely to show up. Now, really anything beyond that is getting them further away from enrolling rather than closer. And what I mean by that is we all have a tendency to think that we've got to answer every question that they ask, or that we've got to let the prospect lead the conversation, Well, truthfully, it should be you have a series of questions you ask. You lead them to your conclusion, which is coming in tonight or coming in tomorrow night for introductory class, and then all your questions will be answered, you know, during that process. And the third part is regardless of what the offer is, I always go back to what we have as a special introductory program gives you a chance to meet the instructors, see the facilities, learn about more about the benefits of the program. And if they had called about a specific style, in your case, if they had said, well, I see teach Jeet Kune Do, a friend of mine did that, I'm really excited about it. So I'm going to modify it greatly by saying, gives you a chance to come down, meet the instructors, see the facilities, learn more about Jeet Kune Do and the benefits that you'll get from training with us in that. And that's it. And so we have a class tonight at 6:15 or tomorrow night at 7, which is going to fit your schedule better. Did that answer that question?
Yeah, I got it. I just wondered if you had anything in between the conversation and the call, but I see the format now. Thanks.
Yeah. No, it's really your attempt is always just get them down to the introductory class. Now, I have seen a few schools. Keith Hafner is one of these, where he schedules them down for an appointment to come have a meeting before they actually do the introductory. And I've seen him do that very well, but especially for most of us who are focusing predominantly on the kids market, even though he is as well, I haven't seen that work across the board as well as it works for him. And so I think you're always looking to schedule them for a lesson. And I think in part, whether it's two lessons or one lesson, if I were having predominantly 32-year-old adults coming in for themselves, I might tend towards having them do the enrollment the first time they're in the school. But with families, a lot of times you have mom bring the kids down. Now I need to get dad back. I want to make sure I really have some lead time to get all the decision makers there and have them prep for the enrollment.
Yeah. Okay, I get it. Because the problem that we have is, since we got class starting, you know, at 4:30, and unfortunately we don't have a separate intro room,
mm-hmm.
So that kind of makes it a little bit difficult. If they can't get here, you know, at 3:00 or something to do that intro class, then what I've been doing for a while is just send them up on Saturdays, and then moving them into class the following week.
Yeah. See, here's what I don't like about that. Is if I call on Monday and you tell me I can't come in till next Saturday, all kinds of things can get in the way.
Right.
And what I would do in that situation is I would book in 30 minutes every day for an introductory class time. So I would take your class schedule and let's say it's Monday, Wednesday at 5:30 and Tuesday, Thursday at 7 and Saturday at 1. You have a set introductory time every day. For 20 years, probably 25 years of My Life Karate, we've had a set time Tuesday, Thursday at 7 and Saturday at 1 with the idea if they call on Monday or Tuesday, we can get them in Tuesday. So when we answer the phones for any of our schools without knowing what their exact schedule looks like, we schedule them for Tuesday, Thursday at 7 or Saturday at 1.
Mm-hmm.
But I would, you know, I want them to come down within 48 hours.
Right.
Because, again, you know, I'm enthusiastic to buy something today. I may not be the same enthusiasm,
exactly.
You know, at the end of the week.
Exactly. Okay.
Good. Thank you. Good,
right,
good, good,
much,
good to talk to you. You bet. Okay. Other questions?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Joe Hunsinger from Northeast PA. How are you doing today, gentlemen?
Fantastic.
Very good. Glad to hear that. Me as well. I've been following you guys for a long time now. I do recall, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere along the lines, I either watched a DVD or listened to one of your CDs in relationship to your first and predominantly your second introductory class where you do the no-pressure sales with the homework that goes home with the client.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if I can't recall of where I have that right at the moment. I should. But anyway, I was wondering if the two of you would either put together or do have something together in relationship to the sheets that you would actually use for your clients, or maybe the introductory process on DVD in the future, that kind of thing, on the second introductory in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. Toby, didn't we just complete a new product on that?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, after the event in May, you're going to see an entire new series of products called Mastering.
Okay.
And it'll be mastering the info call, mastering the intro, mastering the enrollment, and mastering the renewal. And basically what we're doing is the way of programs that are already available through the NAPMA catalog are really good, and they're very good foundational, right? They're very good, like, basic 101 concepts.
Yes.
And they're really good. They are really good. But in today's market, we of course, have been evolving those things for a lot of years and have sort of a whole other level of content available for that. So we're actually going to be launching that just after the event in May. In fact, perhaps even at the event in May. So, you know, it's another excuse for you, you know, if you need another excuse to make sure you're there.
I'm already signed up, so we're cool on that. We're good there.
Fantastic. But yeah, that is something that's coming very soon. We actually have a couple of them that we could launch already. We have the info call and the intro done, but you know, there's a.
Good.
I'd rather do them all at once, but yeah, the
okay.
Answer is yes.
Very good, sir. Thank you both.
And yeah, before we get locked up on time here, to address what you just said in a different way is, the more with a child you can get the child without a, you know, again, you don't want the child to go, this is going to be too much work and it's going to be boring.
Mm-hmm.
But the more you can get a child to show improvements in behavior at home and get the parent to see at least a discrete action step that gives them confidence that this is really going to do what you tell them it's going to do,
yes,
the better off you are. And
I feel really good with that. We're doing a very good job with that. That second process, I really think would help me augment what we're already doing. I don't mean to be arrogant in any way whatsoever, but
no.
I've been following your leads for a long time and almost to a T on it. I have not followed the second introductory lead at all to a T. I'm in the process of working it out, and I need to actually get it the right way. I just need to do it.
So, You bet.
Very good. Well, there might be one other piece of that, by the way, just in general, not specifically to your question, but when you look at the quote, you know, Mile High Karate piece of this system, most of you guys know that we, after the first introductory lesson, we're sending them home with the DVD, which is basically like our infomercial,
yeah,
and with a series of questions that relate back to the DVD. Now, the function for that is three things. It's number one, it's you know, more engagement with us with the process while they're not physically in the school. So when they go home, they have something that they do. The second thing that's really important is we give them the instructions to make sure that they watch the DVD with the family.
Yeah.
So again, if we only had one of the decision makers there for the first lesson, hopefully we'll be able to get both of them to sit down in front of the television.
That's how you're implementing to get that second decision maker in.
That assists you
with that.
It's useful,
well,
exactly. Useful. And the compliance, who knows? I mean, maybe it's 60%, 70%, 80%,
yeah,
who knows?
Yeah.
But then, oh, go ahead.
Toby, I don't mean to interrupt you, but the,
please.
It's not so much about just having both decision makers there, but it's about having both decision makers there having made a decision already that they're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
See, I mean, honestly, I don't want to sit and talk to somebody about money until they've decided they want to do it.
I understand.
Right.
They're ready to buy it for us.
Exactly.
We don't want them if they're not interested. We don't want to raise that question if they're not interested.
Well, that's right. And so, like, a pre-qualification question before the enrollment conference can be, do we want to go ahead and get Joey enrolled in the program, finalize the tuition, do a deposit on the tuition today? And sometimes they say, well, you haven't even talked to me about how much it is yet. Oh, well, we'll go over all of that, assuming that the tuition is comfortable for your budget. Did you want to get him started today? Right? Now, if I metaphorically say, forget about money for a second, is this something you want to do if it's comfortable for you? If I don't get a solid yes on that, I know that there's other stuff other than money that's still out there hanging.
Okay.
And once you get into money, their enthusiasm never improves, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, picture, I go down to the Porsche dealership and I drive the new Turbo. Well, I'm really enthusiastic until they start talking to me about it's $138,000 and,
sure,
you know, we can finance with 20% down. And, you know, I mean, that's
Well, all the negative things come to mind first. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. So a lot of it is making sure that you have both decision makers there and they're in the right frame of mind. My worst example of that is that you see a lot of times mom has drugged dad down. Dad has run in a frenzy from work. Nowadays has his BlackBerry out, still responding to the teleconference that he left in the middle of.
Right.
And has never seen anything before, and she drugged me down to check out this thing because she's excited about it.
Eyeballs are saying, like, let's get this over with. I'm ready to go. I have things to do. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Now, that's not the state I want him in emotionally for this enrollment conference. So an awful lot of it is designed so that you get dad or mom, or if it's an adult, you get their husband or wife, truly engaged in the process, excited about it, and enthusiastic about it before they show up.
Mm-hmm. Well, since I have you right here, I'll make this as quick as I can. I know that you gentlemen are busy, but I've been running my intro class because my classes have been booked before I got to this process with all of you. I've been pretty booked on a weekly basis the way I've set my schedule up. I've been running them side by side with younger classes that relate to but are a little bit better than the brand new student coming in the door, so they have something to get excited about. It's because of my time. Is that getting in my way of my introductory class process? I'm covered as far as instructors are concerned. I'm covered as far as professionalism is concerned in the office. The instructor on the floor is doing a great job. It's not a good job. It's a great job. But again, it's running in the same room off to the side. Not off to the side like they're stuck on this bad area. It's a great... We set it up in a very great way.
I would say it this way, and if without personally being there or seeing a video,
sure.
Is if it's set up in such a way that the parent can hear what you're talking about, that the child can pay attention to what you're talking about, and that it's not such a distraction that they're not getting the benefits of the program, then it's great.
It is. I even have the instructors. There's no key-eyeing or anything like that going on while we're running any intro classes. They understand, you know, whatever we're working on, it's going to be something that's quieter so we can concentrate, and I want them glancing when I choose to have them glance over there. So,
well, that's right.
I think we're doing a pretty good job with that. Until I change my schedule, that's what I have to work with. It's been working well with us on that first intro. I need to conquer that second intro really bad, really bad.
Well, the bigger principle is that you want to have social proof. And if somebody walks in the school and it's empty, that's not social proof.
That's what I was worried about. If it's empty, oh boy, you know, I mean, I could really schedule them on some nice busy classes, which is great.
Yeah. The other thing is you've got to be careful, and you're already aware of that, but it probably goes back to what Dwight was asking as well. You've got to be aware of what's going on in those other classes.
Absolutely.
Before they come up and before they leave.
Sure, that could ruin.
Exactly. I never let our instructors have sparring, for instance, going on when the introductories are coming in. If it's weapons, I want to make sure there's nothing with blades. I want to make sure that the class before pulls them over into a little huddle and talks about the character development and life skills curriculum at the end of class in front of the parents, in front of the intros. So that all of it is staged for the intros, but of course it's stuff that you really do. It's just done in the right time, so you don't show them something that's premature or that you show them that what you're teaching in the intro is truly what's happening in the rest of the school. The other thing you mentioned, though, as far as scheduling, I've seen a lot of schools recently, and some of them with like 28 or 50 students, who are so busy teaching the small number of students that they have that they're not willing to schedule time for marketing and for their sales process. And for a small school, maybe you should be teaching classes on Tuesday, Thursday, and the rest of the week is for marketing for new students. I've seen schools that rather than being out in the community marketing at 9 a.m. and at noon, they have classes running. And I'll tell you what, Toby, you were with us, I believe. We went to see a school in San Antonio that's predominantly an adult school with reportedly well over 2,000 students. And they have a very limited class schedule, but their sales activity was 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day, and their classes were basically four classes a week on Monday through Thursday, and then on Saturday. So you've got to focus on what your predominant importance here is get enough new students in the door, and then be focused enough that you keep them.
Well, we are out of time, so we're going to get cut off here. So thank you so much, everybody, for your time today. Master Robert, thank you for your time as well. And, again, check out that discussion board online and make sure you get yourself registered for Quantum Leap. And if you're in California, shoot us an email or just get over to natmaseminar.com. And we have a full day out there that'll be pretty exciting as well. So good stuff happening.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Speak to you soon. Thanks, everybody.